If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
This week marked the return of the number one show in the group, Vanderpump Rules. Season 11 premiered on Tuesday amid a lot of anticipation, a lot of hype, endless commercials, and perhaps some Scandoval fatigue. The ratings were massive for the premiere, but sentiment on social media seemed to skew fairly negative about the episode, which, to be fair, tends to generally be the case on social media, but it was definitely a fairly drama-free episode, and I think people are forgetting that most premieres are fairly drama-free. First episodes of any season are to check back in with our cast members, which in this case was about a month after the last reunion aired. So wounds were still pretty fresh and Scandoval was still very much on the minds of not just Bravo fans, but of the cast itself. And we have to remember that these shows are about their lives and this was what their lives were about at that time. So it makes sense that at least the beginning of this season will be about that fallout. The hard part about Vanderpump Rules getting to such a high at the end of last season is that there feels like there's only one way to inevitably go, and that's down. And when the media blitz is so all-encompassing on top of the show itself, there's a risk that that fast-tracks the timeline of people being over it. Clearly, people are still tuning in and talking about the premiere, so I don't think they have to worry about that. But I do hope that this season contains enough surprises in terms of how the group was maneuvering last summer. I'd say Lala's voice note to Rachel on Instagram was a pretty big surprise. I mean, people gasped at my watch party, so there's that. And if Pump Rules have proved anything over the years, it's that they know how to surprise us and can't help but to deliver mess. So hopefully that continues this season. I also hope that, and this is something that we talk about in this conversation in this episode, that they are able to break the fourth wall enough, acknowledge the noise around them, acknowledge that they're on this show, acknowledge that maybe they've all made a lot more money off of this, acknowledge, I don't know, part of the intrigue, I think, in terms of what the fallout was from Scandoval in terms of this group is, how do they feel about each other in terms of how they're being treated in the public eye or the money they've made off of this or the opportunities they're getting? Is there jealousy there? Is anybody butthurt about that? How do they all feel about these things? I think they would be wise to lean into that and really mind that. In addition to just general Scandoval fatigue, the other thing I've noticed since the episode aired is that some people are criticizing Ariana for talking about the affair and being mad at Tom still. But do people not realize that this was shot 3 months after she found out that her partner of nearly a decade was cheating on her with a good friend of hers for 7 months? That's not something people tend to get over very quickly. But Ariana is well aware of the fact that she could very well end up being the villain of this season, just, again, as a matter of there being nowhere to go when you've reached such a high. And conversely with Sandoval, he's at such a low that eventually he'll start to rise up a little bit and get at least a few sympathizers, you'd think. I mean, that Nick Vile interview didn't do him any favors, so maybe he's learned nothing. I don't know. I don't want to give him too much credit. But however it shakes out, it'll be fascinating to see both how the audience reacts and how the cast moves about this season. They know it can't be everyone versus one or two people. That gets old very quickly on reality TV. And we can already see that Lala is acting on that by reaching out to Rachel. It's clear to me that production was still holding out hope that she would agree to come back to the show at this point. And Rachel said in her podcast that she gave them the official no around the time of the cast trip to Lake Tahoe that happens this season. So as I say later in this conversation you're about to hear, I wonder if we'll notice an inflection point or a pivot around that time in terms of the storylines or where the conflict is in the group. Anyway, to dive into the Vanderpump Rules premiere with me, share our takeaways, discuss how we think the season should move forward, and more, I invited my pal Kate Casey onto the show today. Her podcast, Reality Life with Kate Casey, airs something like 6 episodes a week and frequently features the behind-the-scenes people of unscripted TV and movies, and so she knows exactly what she's talking about when it comes to production. We had a great chat and even came up with some great ideas for potential spinoffs for this show. Also, before we get to the conversation, I do want to share that I'll be writing recaps of sorts for Betches all season long. So on Wednesday mornings, go to the Betches website, go to my Twitter, where I'll be sharing written out reactions of mine to Vanderpump Rules this season. Okay, so enjoy my conversation with Kate, and please make sure to go subscribe to Gabbing with Gib wherever you're listening to this. Give us a 5-star rating or take 30 seconds to write us a nice review. Thanks for listening. I want to gab. Okay, so today we're gabbing with Kate Casey, the host of Reality Life with Kate Casey and the author of one of my favorite newsletters, What to Watch with Kate Casey.
Oh.
Kate has an incredible perspective on reality TV and unscripted storytelling in general, routinely interviews producers and other people from behind the scenes. And so I'm thrilled to have her here, pick her brain about this week's Vanderpump Rules premiere. Kate, thanks for being here. How are you?
Good. Thank you for saying that. I love your Substack too.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, you send out these lists every Sunday or Monday just with like a list of things that are coming out. And it's so helpful to me. It's great. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, because you're like a dork like me and we like to just
we're so dorky, right?
stuff and just know what's going on. And I feel like you appreciate a deep dive.
Yes, 100%. I think that we both think about these shows in similar ways in terms of like their shows, you know what I mean? About people's lives, but it's not just the lives. So, and I think that we're seeing, I kind of was picking up on a lot of those hints in this Vanderpump Rules premiere. You see the maneuvering happening. You kind of think about what the producers are thinking. Mm-hmm. My biggest takeaway from this premiere, let's just get into it, was that they thought Rachel was coming back. They thought they could get her back at some point, sometime soon.
Yeah.
Do you feel the same way?
I think that they held out hope in the beginning. I think it was more the network that probably held out more hope than the production company. I think the production company at that point had been like, we were bamboozled a little bit too much by her. And then when they set up, you know, the shot where she was outside of like the strip mall and she got videoed there.
The
I think that they were like, this is somebody who just does their own thing and we don't work well with that. So she was became too much of a wild card. I think they were over her. I think the network was more so probably like, do what you have to do to get her back. And it all worked out in the end. I don't even think she's actually necessary for the show. And I also think that the problem that they face, and I remember I interviewed Alex Baskin and I had asked him, is this going to keep you up at night? Like, how do you duplicate this another season? And he said, absolutely. Like, this is what it's like when you got lightning in a bottle and you have to come back and you have to make another season. I think that the problem that they now face, and this is really, frankly, a problem that the Bravo faces,
right,
is the keeping up with the Kardashians of it all, is that the timeline of social media and these shows, there's such a big disparity, like there's such a gap that it makes the flow of the show harder and it makes the audience more frustrated. So once Kardashians went over to Hulu, part of their contract was about setting it up that the show could air quicker after they film
that.
It.
Yeah.
And because of it, you are still feeling like you're getting new information and you're not bored by it. But I feel like with this show in particular, I feel like so much has happened between, you know, that moment 3 months, you know, after the scandal and now, that we kind of feel like we're watching a rerun of a show.
Right. We're back in June 2023 when the mayhem around this story was so large. But I don't know if there are enough sort of teases or promises of like, okay, we are going to peel back this curtain and there are going to be things that you have no idea happened that were happening at the time. I think the Lala sending Rachel the voice note is one of those things, I would say, but there aren't enough of those sort of Easter eggs that I'm kind of expecting, or at least we feel like there aren't going to be any, right? Like, I think with Erica mm-hmm. Jane on Beverly Hills, for example, like that worked really well to me. Like we knew all these legal things were happening in her life, that she was getting divorced, but we had no idea sort of how she was handling all of the stuff behind the scenes. And that to me worked really well. But like Salt Lake, for example, this past season, one of the reasons why it worked is because we had no idea about any of it. So it's, you're right. It's like each show and each season of each show represents this problem in a very different way.
Absolutely. I think the only way that they can salvage it is if they're able to get them to talk about what's happening, you know, the breaking the fourth wall. So for example, I need to know more about whether or not any of these cast members are harboring resentment because Ariana is getting ample business opportunities. Maybe there are arguments about who sold more merch, who's getting asked to be on more TV shows, whether they're resentful of the way that each of them have kind of positioned themselves because of the scandal. That is a great way to, if I were the producer, to kind of pivot from the scandal. But I don't know if the cast is willing to do that. So that's another layer to it, is you really have to have a strong showrunner who makes that cast feel so entrusted in them that they are willing to completely let go. And the job of the showrunner is to really say, you are at your best when you are your most authentic self, because people want to see your humanity. And I think oftentimes with shows that run so long and are so popular, cast members lose sense of that because they're trying to curate this persona that they think the audience enjoys most. And the truth is, they were cast for a reason, because there's something about them that is really special and is fun and interesting and fascinating to watch on camera. And I think that fame, it's almost like a time machine or like an airport security machine where they get compromised by fame.
Right.
And they're no longer the person that we fell in love in the casting process. And then in like the first couple episodes of the first season that they
were on. And I think that evolution is really fascinating and interesting. But like you said, lean into that evolution of your life. And like, you know, a tiny little moment of that was when Lala says that like, one of the things Randall doesn't want from her as part of their custody stuff is that he doesn't want their daughter on the show. And she's like, I don't give a fuck about Ocean being on the show. Those are the kind of things that they would be really wise to lean into, because it acknowledges the fame, it acknowledges the show. It doesn't completely rip down the fourth wall, I would say, but it...
Yeah.
Again, I think one of the reasons why Vanderpump Rules was so popular in the beginning was because they didn't have any money. They lived in these, shitty apartments. Totally. And now they're all really famous and rich. You know, like tell us what that's like.
Why don't you guys see any commonality anymore? Someone needs to go, like, listen, we don't work at the same restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
I can't stand the person they're with. We don't live in the same area. I go to this bar. They're going to this place. Our lives are not intersecting anymore. You just lean into it. In the same way, like The Bachelor should do that with contestants. Like, they should have a contestant go, I'm crazy about you. But God, to be honest with you, I live in Kentucky and you live in Denver.
Right.
And I can't stand Denver. And you're not going to work here. No one will like you here. So I think that sometimes shows, the cast members and contestants get stuck in what they think the audience wants. And the truth is, who you are and what your experience is all that we need.
Right. And I think with this show, one of the things that I'm really intrigued about is that there was this sort of mainstreamification of the Vanderpump Rules audience during the scandal. Like, it went, you know, I think like you said on your podcast, it was like, it had become sort of a niche show on Bravo. And then now it's like this, it's this huge thing ratings wise, zeitgeist wise, drama wise, it's kind of reached this incredible high. But I think that with that comes a lot of new eyeballs on these people, and it's kind of an opportunity for them to, I mean, they probably feel more pressure to do exactly what you just said, because there are, they've doubled their audience. You know what I mean? And so to me, that kind of influx of people is also interesting, because they're aware of that. They're hyper aware of that.
You know, it's an interesting thing going on now too, another layer, like, you know, beyond the wall. The ones that are getting these opportunities that are outside of the network, the way they're emboldened by it, and the jealousy and bitterness of those that are not, because those that are being asked to do those things, again, Bravo, surprisingly to people, because if you're in it, you're in it all the time, but it is pretty niche. And shows like Special Forces and Traitors and all, they're giving these cast members access to a new audience, which propels them into new opportunities, fiduciary opportunities as well. And I think that a lot of times housewives in particular are kind of lazy. They don't really pay attention to media. They don't know what podcasts are, you know, popular, or what media outlets, that magazines, like all these things that are popular. And I think they're only now getting what comes from being on other shows. Like, they were complete, they're happy to be just beyond their show and thought they were like the center of the universe. And now they're like, wait, hold up. Tamra and Phaedra are getting asked to go on all these shows and get all this attention. And I think you're going to see a lot more of like this ruthless behavior. And I'm kind of all for it.
I completely agree. And it's like, you know what? You know what? It's like Ariana's getting all these opportunities, but it's like Sandoval was on Special Forces, like you just said. Like, that is a broadcast TV show that had money. And he made a lot of money. Like, he's going around being like, you know, she's capitalizing on it so much. Like, she needs to get over it. But it's like, dude, you were too. You know what I mean? Yeah. Maybe not as well. I think that's part of it. It's like, she did it well. She leaned into it in a way that I think that there's like skill in that too. So it's sort of like, why are we blaming her for that? You know, and I think
But do you think people are going to start to hate her now?
I do. I mean, I think that I've already seen that. If you click on the Pump Rules hashtag after this premiere, it's like people are very polarized in Ariana all of a sudden. And they either are still in that camp of like, she's our queen, like she can do no wrong. Like, you know, they're celebrating her sort of scorched earth behavior, while there's a total other faction of people who do not like her. They think that she needs to get over it. They think that she, you know, is capitalizing on it too much and needs to move forward. And it's really, you're kind of in either camp, it seems like, in terms of just reading the audience, you know?
Yeah, I think people are going to get Ariana fatigue, but I think it's just typical of any show. Once someone goes up really high, they're going to have to come down.
Exactly.
And it's interesting because so many women and housewives, or, you know, if you're a cast member on Southern Charm, any of these shows, people watch these shows, but as soon as they're on them, it's like they have amnesia and they forget it all. And you're like, no, wait, remember, you might be really popular, but you're going to come down. And conversely, you might be a loser this season, but people are going to love you next season. It's like they forget. They start the show and then they become so discombobulated that they think they're writing their own script. And it's like, no, friend, you're not.
And I kind of think that, I think Ariana has said that she's going to be the villain this season, or she's going to be made to be the villain this season from a lot of people. And I also don't think she really cares. That's kind of one of the things that I've always loved Ariana on this show, because she has always had this sort of like, I don't give a fuck energy. She has like a very blunt delivery sometimes. And I really appreciate that about her. I always have. But I think now it's going to be read in a different way because of the pedestal that she's on. You know,
also, if you look at archival video, and there was a great like behind the scenes episode that they aired one time, Bill Langworthy is talking to one of the producers about how in the beginning, Ariana didn't really want to film. And there was a dance, like at a dance studio, there was something going on and she was sort of hanging in the background. And I think that Ariana's always been kind of mysterious.
Yes.
Because people are trying to figure out, do you want to be on the show or not? Like, is this for you or is it not? And I think that the fact that she's getting all these opportunities that are outside of the show will make the population of people who are already unnerved by her get even more unnerved. However, the people that kind of dig this reverence, like, I don't need to hang out at Tom Tom. I don't have to talk to Tom Schwartz.
Right, exactly.
I don't need to be your friend because I've got other stuff going on. They'll lean into that too.
Yeah. And it's sort of like you imagine in an alternate universe, if this had happened to somebody else on the cast who operates in a very different way, like a Sheena or a Lala, who I think they've always sort of played that fame game and sort of soaked up the attention in a different way than Ariana ever did. Imagine if this had happened to them and the opportunities that like they would have leaned into, the criticism probably would have been even worse. You know?
So true. Okay. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Okay, so Lala and Ariana, you know, are sitting at the table together.
Yeah.
And Lala is talking about her own experience with Randall and how, you know, she has this horrible breakup and he's awful to her. And she's got a child to boot and she's got these custody issues. Clearly, there seems some frustration on Lala's part because the audience has not embraced her perhaps in the same way they're embracing Ariana post-scandal. Like Ariana, you have been wronged. We support you. We want nothing but the best for you. I think most people would see that there's a frustration on Lala's part. Like, why am I not being embraced? I suspect, just with my degree in armchair psychology, that there are a ton of people, namely women, who have not been able to get over how in the first season, she sort of body shamed other women and belittled someone who wasn't hot enough to ride in a private jet. I think that the audience sometimes doesn't get over things. Sometimes they're quite fickle and they get over it. But there are a lot of people that harbor resentment for certain things. And I wondered if you felt that same way too, because, you know, obviously you're a guy. And so maybe hearing someone say, well, if you've never been on a private jet, it's because you were too ugly. You know, I'm paraphrasing, but she said something like that. You're going to hear that and then take that in a different way than another woman.
I think it's a really interesting point. I hadn't thought about it in that way. There's this idea that, like, even people in real life, they're like, you think about them in at the age or the way that you met them at, regardless of sort of what growth that happens in the years between then, they're always sort of that person, right? So like my childhood friends, like I think about the fact that we were 5 years old together, you know, even though we're in our 30s now. Or so I think with reality TV, maybe Lala is just always the Lala from her first couple seasons to everybody, even though she has shown tremendous growth, I think, as a person, and she has more restraint in her. She doesn't talk that way as often. Mm-hmm. And it's a really good point. I'm sure that's true for some of the people. I think that Lala is always going to be the person who was bragging about flying on PJs, keeping Randall a mystery, you know, whatever she did for the Range Rover. Like, it was there were those things that sort of are going to stick to her, you know, and that's probably not fair, because I think, again, she has evolved. But again, like you said, we're a stubborn audience sometimes.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wondered if there is another example of that as a man. Because I think these shows, listen, I always say we're all cultural anthropologists. That's why I love these shows, because it's really a study of human behavior. And it opens conversations with people about friendships and relationships and race and all of these great things. I wonder, conversely, as a man watching Vanderpump Rules, because I think what's great about Vanderpump Rules is that it's truly a show for both sexes.
I agree.
And it makes you think about the time of your life where you had less responsibilities. You were so tight with your friend group. You spent all your time with them. Maybe before you had your corporate job, even though they were like waiting tables, but their schedules are kind of up and down. Is there a viewpoint as a man that you think of something that maybe the female audience wouldn't necessarily read the same way?
I don't know.
That's having to do with male friendships.
Maybe.
Because you guys look at each other and, you know, for example, the way, like, Tom Sandoval and Tom Schwartz, their friendship and the way Tom Schwartz will always support him. Do you think that a woman might look at that friendship and the way that Tom Schwartz supports him in a different way that guys would?
Probably. I think they understand Tom sticking by him sort of and not questioning as much. I think it's the same, honestly, with Kyle and Carl and Summerhouse. Similarly,
yes.
I think there's like,
yes,
I think it's a very similar dynamic. And I'm sure men look at that and they're like, yeah, of course he's sticking by his best friend. Also, because there are less men in this universe. It's one, it's harder for them to find good reality men, good reality male stars. But also, like, Tom and Tom have been in this together since the beginning. And it's sort of like, you know, it makes sense to me why some of these men, the Southern Charm men, they stick together despite what the other
because
have done.
It's such a unique experience that you lean on each other.
Like, we always say that housewives are in a club, right? But the male reality stars on Bravo, that is a very small club. And a lot of them have been around for a very long time. And so I think that is also part of it, too. I think it's this sort of unspoken pact. I don't think it's spoken. I think they just kind of like operate that way, probably. But I think about that a lot, because I'm like, you know, Craig's done all this evolution on Southern Charm, but he's still kind of, you know, he'll question Austin, but he will still stick by Austin and Shep regardless. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So I think that's
so true. And I think that's a great window into like the difference between sometimes the little nuances between male friendships and female friendships.
Yeah, 100%. So I wanted to ask what you sort of read, you know, Lala sending this voice note to Rachel, kind of being the first person, quote unquote, to express empathy for Rachel in this episode. We're seeing her sort of turn away from the group in that way, in terms of how she's talking and viewing Rachel. How do you, what do you read into that as? Like, what is it what you said earlier of her wanting people to kind of shed light on her situation and trying to get more empathy for her? Do you read it as her being a good reality star in terms of?
I think it's both.
Okay.
I think she's fallen on the sword for production. She goes, I'll do you guys a solid. And I think she's
good at her job.
Very savvy woman. I think she is probably somebody who would be great on other shows too. She'd be great on The Traitors.
She'd be a great housewife.
I don't think so.
Oh,
I don't think she, no. Mm-mm.
Why not?
I think that she is a little too young. I think her daughter needs to be like 14 and above. I don't think women with very small children are great housewives because I say this as a mom of five kids. You're so in the thick of the, like in the weeds of it all that I don't know if you would be present enough to tell the story of your life in the best way. But also, I think that the children are a great way of telling that story of that mother. And children who are over 14 will roast a mother. So like a housewife who like wants to go with this curated image. And I give you the example of Michael and Brianna from Orange County as examples.
Totally.
Vicky's like, I'm a power woman. I've got this business. And they're like, you're the worst mother. Like, you're so annoying. And so it kind of like dismantles the imagery that they want.
Absolutely.
So I don't think Lala would be great until her daughter is at least 14.
So it's a yet. She has it in her potential.
It's a yet.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. I would want her to be with somebody maybe in the entertainment industry because she'll tell you the honest story of, I go to parties. No one cares about me because it's all about him. Or maybe it's all about me and I feel bad for the guy that I just married. And I'm also annoyed that he doesn't make enough money that I expect. All that story. Crystal's great for that story.
So good.
Too.
Yeah, absolutely.
But she would be great on The Traitors because she's very cutthroat, which is funny because like she's from Utah. So you wouldn't expect it. I think that there's two parts. I think she fell on the sword for production because she goes, the show's not going to move. We're not going to evolve. We're not going to move on from this. And the audience is going to hate us if we don't have some sort of resolution to this Rachel issue. So yes, that's part of it. But I also think there is a frustration on her part. I've done all this work on myself. I have a child now. I'm in this very murky lawsuit. And yet no one is paying attention to my plight. Where is the empathy for me? But again, I think that goes back to the way that she presented herself. And I think she pissed off, namely the women who at that time who watched that show who had a newborn and they're rocking their newborn to sleep and their boobs are long because they're breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. And they're like, who's this bitch going to tell me that I wasn't hot enough to have the kind of lifestyle that she is? I think that just pissed people off.
Right. Totally.
So I think it's both those things.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that I'm not sure that her I see what she's saying in terms of her and Rachel have both been sort of the other woman, but I think that the situations that was happening in they're not really analogous to me. You know what I mean? Like, she's kind of drawing this fuzzy line that Ariana's pointing out, and it's like, well, you know, you were yelling at people for playing pickleball with Randall back in the day after you had broken up, and it's sort of like, now you're contacting Rachel like a month, you know, it's sort of.
You're right. So they're pointing out the discrepancies in her loyalty in friendships where she's trying to say, I've also been scorned by a man. And those are two very different pools.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that obviously we know that Rachel doesn't come back to the show. She doesn't take the paycheck. But I'm thinking about an alternate universe where she did come back and does Lala go full force in defending Rachel and being buddy-buddy with her? Because now we know that Lala, Katie, Sheena, and Ariana are all now on good terms, which again takes some of the drama out of what we're going to see this season a little bit. But do you think Lala would have gone full that direction?
I don't think people change that much. So I think you'd have one episode where she tries desperately to make a connection with Rachel. I've been there before. I know how it feels. And then Rachel says something stupid, which is going to happen because she has three brain cells and has no strategy of life. And by the end of the episode, Lala goes, oh, for fuck's sake, forget it. You're an idiot. There's your episode.
Right. It's because they hadn't heard from her and she forgot how she was like. And because she said on Watch What Happens Live, she was like, the minute I listened to the Bethany podcast that she did, I regretted reaching out. And it's like, oh, this is how she talks.
Yeah.
Also,
Rachel's strategy is so bad. Can we talk about that for a second?
Yes.
She should have never done, and this is from somebody who did crisis PR for many years, she should have never done an interview unless it was after 6 months. No one's going to take you seriously unless you've had a period of introspection. It was like she left the facility, went to her mom's house, took the dog for a couple walks, and then does this interview. It wasn't in enough time. I just know that about people. Number two, she launches this podcast. And by the way, she needs like a producer to sit with her, which is like, why? Just talk
to yourself.
You were in a reality show, just talk yourself.
And the producer doesn't even have a good mic on them. It's bizarre. Yeah.
Bizarre. She didn't launch the show on the day of the premiere of the pod of the Vanderpump Rules. Like, this is why Lala can't talk to her. She's like, you're so dumb.
She doesn't get
I
it.
Can't handle it.
She doesn't get it. And meanwhile, Nick Vile has both toms on. He launches it on the day of the
Brilliant.
Premiere.
Perfect.
And also, Rachel already told most of her stuff on Bethany's show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So she didn't save it for her own show even. So it wasn't even that much new information that we got from her at the beginning of this month. So I completely agree. I'm like, she's totally flubbing it. And I also don't, I also think that she keeps saying, you know, she wants to be away from the spotlight and she doesn't want any of this, but I don't think she can resist for that much longer. I don't
this
know if it's coming back to
girl
the show,
who, like,
but.
Oh, please. She wanted to be on that show so much.
Yeah. She says that I guess the cast goes on a trip to Tahoe and she says that they wanted her to be her re-entry into the show to be a surprise appearance on the cast trip. But then she just denied it because I guess they would have surprised her with like the whole dog thing too with James is really iffy.
I feel like they're both terrible dog parents.
Yeah, but she's trying to, I mean, it's a whole thing, but I don't really want to get into the details of that.
But wait, also the Tahoe thing, like re-entry, like, hey guys.
I mean, right. Like how would that have worked? Like on any
that just would have been everybody been like, get out of here.
Right.
Also, like we just said at the very beginning of the episode, by that time, the audience is over it.
Yeah,
I think the audience doesn't really care about Rachel anymore.
I don't think so either. I think a lot of people still care about hating Sandoval, but I don't think they care about Rachel because I think there is more nuance in terms of like the amount of blame placed in different places and how she was treated, I guess. But like with him, I think it's just sort of people still do feel strongly about that. You know, we see Lala trying to mix it up, you know, with the whole Rachel stuff. Where else do you think that they can mix it up this season? Where do you expect to see some of the diverging happening within the group?
I feel like it's going to have to be a little Housewives-y or Kardashian on Hulu-ish where he has to bite the bullet and say, Ariana, I'm really sorry about how this all ended. The truth is, like, we probably fell out of love before. You know, whether or not we could salvage a friendship remains to be seen, but I'm sorry. Then he goes on, we get a matchmaker and somebody tries to set him up on dates and then he gets wronged and then he cries, oh my God, I'm never going to find the person I want. And then Sheena comes in and she's like, you know what? I knew you when you were 26. I know you have a good heart. Let me set you up with someone. And then she sets up, you know, and then Ariana, I don't think she's going to be on the show anymore.
After the season, you don't?
No.
Why not?
Why would she?
How does she sustain this into a different career if she's not on the show?
I don't think she wants to be on the show anymore. I think she'll probably...
She can be like a full-time influencer kind of person?
Maybe. I just think she's like...
Actress.
I do not want to go back in time. You know, in her mind, I think she's already in college.
Mm.
Does she want to go back and do sophomore year again? I don't think.
Right.
So
yeah,
that's the plight I think of. I think production's pretty savvy about like making things work. I think it's the network that probably calls them and says, what do you mean? This was our hit show. You got to get the band back together. And the producers are like, the band
wants
sucks.
To break up.
Yeah. Yeah. Like we can make it other things work. She's probably going to move to New York.
Right.
She's going to sell that house somehow. And she's going to want to get out of Dodge. She's been living there forever.
Right.
She's like, why wouldn't you go to New York?
Where her boyfriend lives.
Or if she's smart.
Right. What is it?
If we're her agents. And we could do it. You and I could be band
great
for fantastic team. We go, you do a new show in New York.
There we go.
Ariana takes
it's like
New York.
It's like when Whitney Port went to New York and we got the city. Totally. Yeah.
And we want to know what your experience is moving to New York City and how that all changes. And are you going to stay with this guy, or are you going to, now you're in the city, you're like, I can't stand you. And then you're going to pursue what, you know, if she wants to be like a Broadway star, great. And then we meet all these Broadway people. I want to know who's on Broadway. Like, what are their personal experiences? And then you fall in love with them and then they have a spinoff.
Oh my God.
We can keep this train going.
Absolutely. And also, if she does that, she'd live in a nice apartment. So we can abandon any element of the, like, we still have to be kind of poor. You know what I mean? Like, we're not grown-ups. Like, we are, she'll have a grown-up life in New York. She also has she has a lot of like queer friends. So that could be a really interesting group that she's part of. Mm-hmm. We're on to something here.
Are you going to be in the background just like swilling a martini?
I'd hope so.
Right?
I'd hope to make a cameo or two, you know?
You know what I also think would be a great show? And I know you're friends with her. Kiki in Miami should be the host of the revamped House of Style from yesteryear on MTV. Wow.
Yes.
She should bring that show and be the host and travel all over the world and interview designers. And I don't know, you have to throw some like TikTok influencer kind of angle there, but
totally.
She should be the face of the revamped House of Style. You're welcome, America.
When are you starting your production company, Kate?
I know, right?
Honestly, I love these ideas.
When you watch these shows forever, don't you sort of feel like you're doing that? The math in your head.
Oh my God.
Too?
Even when the Kardashians Hulu thing was all announced, and they made it sound like it was going to be this sort of like empire of shows on Hulu. And I remember this was like 4 years ago or something, but I tweeted like all these ideas for shows that they could do. And they were all like amazing. And I was just like, why aren't they doing these things? You know, why aren't they doing a show about Malika? Why aren't they doing shows about all the random best friends that nobody knows about? Why aren't they doing shows about XYZ? So I think about it all the time.
I think about wanting to run a streaming network at least 15 times a day.
Same.
That would be my dream.
Our brains are not broken, but they're very...
What's the stream? What are we going to call it? Gabcat?
I love that.
Gabcat.
Coming to an Apple TV near you.
There you go.
There we go.
Gabcat. But I do, I do think Ariana, she should leave that show, and Alex Baskin and his team should make the spinoff where she goes to New York. It's Ariana.
And it could be a you know, what do they call it? What do they call the spinoff that sort of happens within the episode? They kind of sidestep into it. It could happen. Yes. She could be packing up her house. It had just sold, and maybe she has one last awkward goodbye with Tom, and then she gets on a first class flight to JFK and goes to her gorgeous penthouse.
You know what she does? It's like that movie where they're with Dustin Hoffman and in the back of the wedding church.
Yes.
She goes to his show with his cover band, and she goes to the back in a New York outfit. She's going to be all black. Like, just say goodbye to the pastels and the summer dresses.
It's designer.
New York
Prada.
Look.
Yep.
She's in the back. She looks up at him and he's singing the cover song. He's singing like Jesse's Girl or something with like his pleather outfit on.
No shirt
on. He's singing the song and there are all these like weirdos in the audience like screaming for him. But you get the eye lock between him and the on stage and her in the back. And she just puts up a peace sign like, I'm out. And then you see her moving into her apartment. Now, I also like the Broadway angle because...
Yes.
Think of all the interesting characters that would meet in New York, and like, how do they make a living? Like the struggle, your friendship, like when you've been living in an apartment with somebody and then they get a big role and then you're still like in the background, like all those little things would be so cool.
Yeah. And I think that with the Roni reboot, the whole thing was like, they have to get these sort of like New York celebrities, you know, and that would be a shoe-in with this show for her. It's like you could have somebody, I don't know many Broadway stars' names, but like Hugh Jackman, Sutton Foster, you know, we could do something like that. So, this is great.
Well,
we're pitching
this. We just saved the network.
The last thing that I think about in terms of like how they can make it so it's just not everybody versus one or two people on this season of Vanderpump Rules is there's something going on with Sheena and Brock. We saw the Sheena stuff at BravoCon a little bit, which obviously is not going to be part of this show, but Sheena and Brock had that conversation on their couch, and Brock I forget exactly what he said, but he said something to that was sort of in defense of Sandoval a little bit, like they sort of understood what he was doing with the blocking and stuff. But then Brock said that, or Sheena says that Brock is lifting buddies with Ariana's boyfriend.
Okay.
Is Brock going to be one of those people who wades into it again? Does he ultimately go to Team Sandoval a little bit? Because we know that Sheena was sort of really good friends with him. I don't know. I'm just sort of trying to figure out how are they mixing it up?
That's kind of interesting and important storytelling, is that Brock is from Australia. He's got this weird situation with children back there. Does he have a friend group? And maybe he's leaning into these guys because he's actually quite lonely. What you need to do is you need to have an in-the-moment interview with him, or have him in a conversation with Sheena. Maybe not even Sheena, because maybe he doesn't feel like he can be completely open. Yeah. But he talks about like the loneliness. Like, I'm here. I don't feel like I have friends. I love my wife. I love my daughter. I love hanging out with Lala. But the truth is, I need my male friends. And as you pointed out earlier, I think men look at friendship in a different way than women do. And so why don't you explore that? That to me would be the advice. I also don't think it's fair that we haven't fully explored Brock's real story.
I agree with that. It's an elephant in the room, because it makes headlines outside of the show all the time.
Yeah. You know? I think that, I don't know if I'm right. I would love to interview her and ask her, but I wonder if Sheena feels concerned at times because there's not enough of her story that's told. And maybe it's because there's really not much there. But if there's not much there, how do you still kind of live within this space when like you're not really being covered that much? And that's just how you've made an income.
I know, but I'd love to know what she thinks of all the stuff in Australia, like really deep down. How does she feel about it?
Do we get the sense that she would feel comfortable enough to say that on TV? Because she's a daughter now. I think that changes it up too.
No, I agree. I think she's addressed it a little bit on her podcast, but like that's a very safe space for her. She can edit out whatever she doesn't want to show to ultimately make it out there. So I understand her point of view on it in terms of not wanting to talk about it on the show. But like you said, she has this kind of pretty stable home life that doesn't give her much.
Well, also could be she's trying to protect the children. I don't know if she's met them. I think she has, perhaps, but
totally.
She's trying to protect them because these kids in Australia want someone to on a television show?
It would exacerbate the problem.
Their relationship with their father. I think she's in a hard position because she's on a show which requires you to open your life up, and there are certain boundaries that she can't cross.
Right.
And also think she wants to protect her marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's her second marriage, and she really wants this one to work. And he seems to be very loving to Sheena and their daughter.
Totally. I completely agree.
And so I think that people feel confusion because they know that there are these two children in another country, and they're trying to reconcile how this loving father could be a loving father to two children that he doesn't have a relationship with.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Honestly, if you're going to do a story about 30-year-olds, this is the stuff you got to tell.
Right.
20-year-olds, it's a completely different thing. 30-year-olds is like, all right, this is going to get a little bit grittier.
Right. And I think that that's sort of what we hinted at with like the Ariana spinoff is like, I think within Vanderpump Rules, there's this Peter Pan syndrome, this conceit that they're all still kind of like kids, you know?
Yeah.
Some of them have their own kids, but they're not like fully allowed to like admit they're fully grown up. You know what I mean? And I think I wish they would let them do that a little bit more. And we talk about more adult issues, but it's supposed to be a show about cheating and partying and working at restaurants. So it's like there's this, they're kind of caught in the middle a little bit in terms of the identity of the show.
Well, maybe that's why, you know, I think we'll see what happens with the spinoff, the Valley spinoff.
Right. What are you
excited
about?
See if the audience likes it. No, because
me neither.
I don't really know any of them. And I have to tell you, when you have kids, you don't really want to watch a show where kids are.
Right.
Because that's your life.
I believe that.
I told you I have five children. I never talk about this.
You got enough of that at the house. Right. Exactly.
I know. It's like, by the way, no one cares about other people's children. They don't.
Right. Oh,
the only
God.
Time they care in reality show is when the kids are roasting their parents.
Right. And they're old enough to bring the comedy to. Exactly.
Right. Like, do we really care about Melissa Gorga's kids? No, unless they're like, dad, you're a meatball. You're annoying. Don't come to my wrestling matches. Then we're like, okay, they're cool. Like right. Teresa's kids we like now.
Because they have personalities. Older. Right, exactly.
And they have personality. And they're like, what are you doing? That outfit's stupid. But I don't think little kids work in, I don't know. I don't think they always work.
Yeah, I also think that like, it's very clear to me that Stassi and Bo turned it down. And it would have, I think it would have been much more compelling to check back in with them. I'm not compelled to check back in with Jax and Brittany, really. I'm really not. So,
yeah.
TBD on
also,
the valley.
I noticed this in just regular life. Like, parents with little kids want so badly to present themselves as the greatest parents that ever lived. And when you have a teenager, because I have, my oldest is a teenager, my youngest is preschool. I cannot talk to preschool parents because I'm like, you guys.
You don't get it.
Shit.
Right, exactly.
And by the way, I don't either. I got a girl at home who's on TikTok looking at videos of guys that would probably give a girl an STD. Like, I got bigger fish to fry. Who fucking cares about the organic blueberry applesauce?
Exactly. Like,
you are headed for disaster, friends. Like, buckle up.
I love that. Yeah. And we're going to be seeing a lot of that on The Valley. So last question, Kate, what's your interest level on this season of Vanderpump Rules? We watched the first episode, maybe in comparison to the end of last season. How are you? Are you genuinely interested in watching this season? What's your gut feeling?
I feel like it's like The Voice, where it's like the first episodes where it's like, you know, they put the best out in the beginning and you're like, oh, that guy's going to go all the way to the end. I'm like at an 8 now, okay. But I'm fearing that at least the next 6 ones, I'm going to go down to a 2.5. But then I might check back towards the reunion.
Right. Right. I'm wondering if once it became very clear that Rachel wasn't coming back, I wonder if we'll see or sense a pivot from that moment, like around the trip. I wonder if that happens.
Maybe.
You know what I mean? Like if it's like, okay, we're definitely not getting her. We were relying on her for, you know, this many storylines. How do we pivot? So I'm wondering if that happens. I agree. The next couple episodes might feel a little bit deflated. But I'm curious if that happens.
Do you think that the producers like get the bat phone out by episode 3, the filming, you know, and their storyboards, and like they call, you know, network headquarters and they're like, we let go of the dream. She's not coming back. And by the way, we don't want her back.
We let go of the dream. So we kind of got to bring Jax around a little more to stir things up.
So if they did bring her back, it'd be like one episode of like, everyone's like, you suck. We hate you. Throw an exeter. And then she's like,
and then what?
I'm going to try out for the Miss Blah Bitty Blah pageant. And it's right. Like, you're not actually that interesting. She was not interesting.
No, she wasn't. No, she dated into the show and she was never that interesting until. Never. Right. Exactly. Kate, I really appreciate you doing this. You make me think differently about these shows. And I really appreciate that. Tell everybody when they can listen to your podcast, where they can follow you, your Substack, all the things.
Okay, so I have episodes 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday, Reality Life with Kate Casey, wherever you listen to podcasts. My Substack is going to tell you what to watch in unscripted television, everything in reality TV, but also documentaries and series. And I firmly believe that people who like reality shows like documentaries and true crime. We're all the same people. So go to katecasey.substack.com. Bonus episodes on Patreon, a great Facebook group called Reality Life with Kate Casey. And I'm also regularly at the grocery store. You can check me out there.
Love it. go to Ralph's. Well, Kate, thanks so much. It's been really fun.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. Subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on any podcast platform to listen to new episodes. And subscribe to Gabbing with Gabe on YouTube to watch full-length versions of our interviews. We'd also love your support with a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can follow me at Gibsonoma on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And keep up with all things Gabbing with Gib at Gabbing with Gib on Instagram and TikTok. Gabbing with Gib is an independent podcast hosted by me, Gibson Johns. It's produced by myself and Riley Dabbs. Graphics are by Rachel Roth, and our cover art photography is by Troy Hallahan. If you want to reach out about guest booking, sponsorship, or advertising opportunities, email us at gabbingwithgib@gmail.com. Thank you again for your support, and see you next time.